Christmas. The View from Cleveland. The Stewart Family Home. A child holds a small model aeroplane. He whooshes it through the air. If Barreto sees a chance to develop the central metaphor of the narrative, he's going to take that chance and develop that central metaphor. And he's going to develop it like the Dickens. The child's motion takes Barreto's camera around the room. No flashing lights in these premises. These bulbs are at a constant luminance and colour temperature. Whoever sourced them is from good stock. As the boy hugs Donna in gratitude for this very on-brand gift, Ted takes a present to his grandmother. She's a handsome woman with a fine set of gnashers. Good grief, these people live a long time. When I was born, only one of my grandparents remained, and she was clinging on by her talons. Ted's grandmother looked in fine fettle, trim, and with a knowing smile, the only evidence of senescence being near deafness. But a condition that could well mean she feels isolated slash frightened is mercifully mined for laughs. Ted gives her a universal remote control, a chance for the art department to excel once more, and a nice metatextual nod to Adam Sandler's matchless opus, Click. Of which more in Gordy the Shaw's criminally underrated The Gripper film. The Stewarts all wear red jumpers. Is this a cult? Is Donna going to be sacrificed? When Ted turns to Donna and says, "You're next," the blood runs cold. Is this the end of the line? A shocking denouement in which these wool-wearing suburbanites drain the blood from our most favoured heroine and sup her soul? No. The "You're next" is another one of Ted's cheeky misdirects. He's about to give Donna a present. On repeat viewings, there is a persistence to Ted's flirting technique that crosses over from mere negging into psychotic mind games. One has the feeling that were he to propose to Donna, he'd say, "I've got bad news. I want to take care of you for the rest of your life." A statement that would sound an alarm for any sliding doors aficionado. Donna opens a package. It's a watch that has two faces, so that Donna can set it to two time zones simultaneously. Ted says that whenever a passenger asks her what the time is, she can think about him, even though the two things have nothing in common. As well as being terribly touching, this massively chunky watch can also help remind Donna that Ted isn't sure that she can reliably add or subtract single and low double-digit numbers. And there's more to come. A red jumper, so that she can match the rest of the Stewarts. Ted's mother pipes up, "I got you a size medium. I hope you like it baggy." I consider this to be one of the strangest pieces of dialogue in cinema history. Why would Ted's mother feel compelled to say this? It makes one wonder whether earlier Ted had given his mother this urgent injunction.
"Look, Mar, I know you handle all the sweater buying around these parts, but this new girl of mine, she only wears things that are far too small for her."
"Nonsense, Ted. You can't wear wool unless it's loose. Tight wool can drive a person crazy. Plus, you have to allow for shrinkage."
"She don't care about no shrinking, Spa. It looks like everything she's ever owned has been on a bar wash. I'm serious. She looks like she's had an unexplained growth spurt."
"Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's Christmas. And Christmas is not the time for restrictive garments, Ted. What's wrong with loose wool? I thought you said she was tall."
"She's twice my size, Ma. It's like looking up at Mount Rushmore."
"So she's gonna need a large."
"Don't you buy her no large, Ma."
"I'm telling you, Ted, if this dame is as tall as you say, anything small is gonna be ridiculous. It won't cover her belly button."
"That's just the way she likes it, Ma."
"What is she, an exotic dancer?"
"No, she's classy, Ma. She just likes to get a little air around the middle, like everyone who came to prominence in the mid-90s. Remember back then, Mar, it was all about the midriff."
"You kids are crazy."
But Ted was right to be concerned. Donna will not don the jumper. She holds it up as if to say, "Do you expect me to climb into this tent?" before putting it down. As the scene draws to a close, someone called Greg, whether he is Ted's brother, brother-in-law, or merely a legal colleague, we don't know, has positioned a camera on a stand. He sets the timer. Ted, who always calls Donna Jensen, as if they were roommates at military academy, tells her to get into the picture. She demurs, saying it's a family picture, but Ted runs roughshod over her and drags her into the frame. Greg, all forename, joins them. An off-camera flash. A new family portrait. The kind of family that Donna never had. We cut to Donna in profile. Behind her, the deep blue of night. Through a window pane, rivulets of rain. Ever a master of mood, Barreto contrasts the warm camaraderie of the previous tableau, a hot, almost Spanish feel, blood reds, warm smiles, with an image of cool detachment. Her face is turned away. We see only one Jensen eye, and not directly. Ted congratulates Donna on surviving her first Stuart family Christmas. Implication? She will have to survive more. To use an expression oddly absent from the narration, Ted's in it for the long haul. Donna says that she is unused to such family gatherings, one with no sudden gusts or impromptu show numbers. She confides that she never knew family could be anything other than shouting. But surely, we say to ourselves, some seasonal shouting is necessary to keep everyone on their toes. Don't the Stuarts risk ossification, becoming infected with a slightly distasteful pride in their own reasonableness? We hear an instrumental of time after time swell underneath the scene. Unconsciously, we associate this song with Ted and Donna parting. The last time we heard it, they were outside Lulu's while Ted delineated the categories of kiss he was prepared to accept. At this moment, when they should be closer together than ever, it feels like they're drifting apart. Donna's afraid of becoming emotionally grounded. Her heart is that red balloon, soaring high out of sight into the stratosphere. And, because of something to do with atmospheric pressure that I find hard to understand, it will almost certainly explode.